If you're just tuning in, welcome. This is Manga Masala, the South Asian show here on Pi Radio, Manchester's number one youth radio station. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima.
Hello, everyone.
And I was just saying to Halima, who hurt ZK? What's going on? What's going on there? That's problems.
I wonder, like, in general, how many people write songs that they actually relate to?
Because like, obviously, that'll be some real life rather than just like a subject matter,
right? Because obviously, it is like a bit of a phenomenon with like a lot of young male artists that they're rapping about, you know,
relationships.
Not even that. I mean, like money and women and
making
out the hood. Oh, I was going to say something, but I don't think I should.
Yeah, I don't.
I agree. But I get what you're saying. Like, I always think this with, like, you know, like, whenever people talk about, like, trapping and whatever.
Yeah, and it's like, you're flipping, you're from the suburbs. What are you on about?
Yeah, but I'm also like, are you really, like, if this is true, are you not just, like, incriminating yourself?
Well, I mean, like, in actual drill music, it is actually the, like... Have you seen last week or the week before where the Labour Party have released a load of criminals from prisons?
Yeah.
And one of them is like a drill artist. He is like, he's scared. Let me not say anything in case he's listening. Now the off chance that he might be listening to our show.
Yeah.
Let me not say anything.
No, but I mean, we can talk about that briefly, but yeah, it is mad. Like, the thing is, I don't know what the solution is with this whole prison thing because... They basically keep releasing loads of people from prison at once because the prisons are in dire states. They're overcrowded, but then they're releasing loads of people who actually... They say that they're not a danger to society, but ultimately...
They are.
They are. And the proof's in the pudding in the fact that so many of these people that are being released are readmitted. Like within like a couple of days a week because they literally go back out and
it's not a protocol where I don't know if it's like kind of the meter of being released is like rehabilitation.
Exactly.
They're just freeing up prison space, aren't they? But like some of these people that have been released, I'm like, wow, like I am an abolitionist, but maybe for now, like just keep a hold of them. Do you know what I mean?
It's also the fact that they're just kind of being a lot of them are being released earlier than they were expecting. So they haven't had that kind of like rehabilitation process, getting ready to go back into the outside world kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they're suddenly being just chucked out and it's just like, of course they're going to randomly, like, of course they're going to resort to, like, to crime again. Like, it's not...
But
like,
I think that's an indictment on the prison system
as well.
Like, a lot of people who leave prison and then end up recommitting crimes or, you know, like, re-enter a life of crime, like, a lot of that I do think is because of, like, the prisons obviously have not sufficiently rehabilitated them.
Yeah, 100%. So, yeah, I think it's more just...
Like, why put them there in the first place? Like, it's punitive, it's a punishment, which, to be fair, we already know that about the prison system.
Yeah. Anyway, how have you been over the past week?
It's been a really uneventful week.
Bit boring. Didn't do anything for Halloween.
No, I don't celebrate Halloween, do you?
No, not really.
I remember, like, when I used to live in Longsight, like, as a kid, obviously, like, it's an Asian majority area.
Mm.
The area that I live in now, like, it's a very white, predominantly white area. Like,
you really switched up, like, majorly.
Like, it's gone. I've gone from one extreme to the other. But having, like, so the kids now in my area, like, Halloween, like, trick-or-treating is a thing, and it's nice. Like, everyone opens their doors and, like, you know, give them sweets and stuff. But obviously, Asians, South Asians, you know, like... specifically Muslims are like very superstitious. So like I remember on Halloween every house would just be locked up, like people would not innocent kids are trying to do trick-or-treat and people would not be opening their doors. Like it was genuinely terrifying. I remember Halloween being a scary time.
But then because it was an Asian majority area, did you actually get that many people coming around?
We did, you know, sometimes. Yeah, we did actually. But you know what, I think it was a time of, like, again, it was quite a high crime area as well when I was growing up. So, like, things like Bonfire Night, Halloween, crime was, like, at a high. Like, there was a lot. The next morning, you'd wake up and it's like, this person's house got robbed, this person's house got robbed, this person got mugged. Like, it's...
Yeah. It's sad.
It was like the purge. Halloween was like the purge for us, basically.
Literally. I mean, that's kind of what it's meant to be, I guess. So at least you're living your proper Halloween life, I suppose. But... On the topic of Bonfire Night, that's reminding me. I got woken up at 5 a.m. this morning. Guess what?
Fireworks.
Yes.
Yeah, fireworks have been going off near my house as well, but I quite enjoy them.
But like at 5 a.m. in the morning.
Why is that waking you up, Carlos? You were a light sleeper.
I'm actually not, but it was it really loud? Close. Like, the people on, like...
Must have been your courtyard.
No, but not even that, but, like, my estate chat, like, people are commenting on that, like, what is that? Who's doing this? It sounds like it's coming from, like, the cemetery. Well, I'm just like... that was the one time where I was actually like, yeah, I agree, this is actually ridiculous. Why? You don't need to set fire
at five in the morning. Yeah.
Like, come on. Like... Yeah,
that's some stuff my family would do.
Yeah, but on the estate jet, actually, obviously, because it was Halloween, someone put something on there where they were basically saying that, oh, like, someone's driving around and they're like, you know how people, like, some people leave sweets outside rather than opening the door? Yeah. Apparently someone was driving around and, like,
napping all the sweets
and driving
off. No.
And they were all like, oh, no, what behaviour? But I was kind of like... I kind of get it. You know what I mean? Kind of like legendary behavior for me, though.
The poor kids walking around not getting anything.
You know what? Like, I feel like if you put sweets out, you kind of know that.
This is what you call this is how you know the society is not able to self-govern. That is the mark. That is the real test of whether you are able to self-govern in society.
But I mean, just look at the world right now. What kind of state that we're in right now do you look at the world and think, yeah, I trust people to, like, just take a sweet
that's
each
what's
and
so
leave
bad
it, like, no,
that we should be able to trust people.
We should, but, like, reality check, like, come on.
Yeah,
like, no.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, on that note, let's get straight into it.
Bad Vibes Island.
And we've got a fresh off the press, literally this morning, news
yes.
to start with. The new leader of the Conservative Party, Kemi Badenoch, who... Do you mind? You're chomping.
Oh, am I sorry?
Yeah,
flip it out.
I'm getting proper
Carlos,
ASMR
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, Carlos, like, is really, really, like, okay, you're sensory, you're getting very sensory overload. Let me tell
you. I'm concerned about my listeners right now. Like, you're chewing gum, but you're literally into the mic.
Sorry, like, sorry to all our live listeners. Sorry.
Like I was saying, hot off the press, new Conservative Party leader, Kemi Badenoch, who I believe... I literally, no one's coming to mind, which makes me think that this must be correct. The first Black British female leader of any party. I don't know if that's correct, but certainly
definitely the Tories.
Yeah, so the Tories, Labour, any significant
large political party.
Yeah. However. I mean, I was saying to Halima that we're going to talk about this just now, and you were like, it is literally the conversation that we had about Rishi Sunak.
Just retweet.
Yeah. But, I mean, do you reckon there are going to be some... Surely there'll be some people out there who will be like, this is a win for the Black British community. Look how progressive we are. Which I do think there is a conversation to be had about why is it that the Conservatives are the ones that have had, like... two female prime ministers have had people of colour leading their party. And I get that from, in our opinion, I think it is like a certain level of tokenism and like tick box exercise.
Yeah,
that's my opinion.
I do believe that.
However, I think there is a conversation to be had about why is it that, like, Labour, for example, has never really come close to being in that position. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, even like the Labour before, I mean, the Labour right now, I would say that we don't necessarily identify with, in our opinion. But even Labour previously, they've never really come close to actually having a female.
I think perhaps
leader,
because,
or even person of colour leader.
I think perhaps because the Labour Party are historically that, like, the kind of people of colour, like British ethnic minorities, have historically been kind of more Labour leaning, whereas the Tory Party are kind of historically presented or perceived to be as more kind of like. For white people, you know, and like the kind of institution level of racism in the Tory party has been kind of like really extensively kind of like reported on. I think maybe they feel, in my opinion, that there's more to compensate for, perhaps in that sense, you know, like maybe Labour are a little bit complacent because they have such a stronghold with ethnic minorities,
yeah.
Whereas the Tory party, it's a little bit more to prove. And I think it is that thing where we spoke about with Rishi Sunak, where it's like, okay, let's put a person of colour as a figurehead here, and therefore it puts us in a position to denounce any accusation of racism. And now it's like, it's because obviously there's racism, and then there's like anti-blackness, which is like a specific problem. And to have the first Black leader, especially a Black woman leader, because again, there's anti-blackness and then there's misogynoir, which is an even more specific problem. So to have someone like Kemi as the figurehead of what is historically kind of perceived as a very traditional, white, middle, upper class, you know, political party, it does put them in that position, as I say, to denounce all kinds of accusations. But in doing so, it actually, like, it really does derail serious conversations that need to be had about, you know, racism and misogyny and all of these things. Like,
yeah, I think they do kind of see it as a get out of jail free card kind of thing. Yeah. Just like roll up whoever, like, is the whoever their person of color of the month is, to kind of be the, like, what's called figurehead of the party, which then means, well, how can you say that the party is a problem with race? Look who the leader is. How can you say that we're sexist? Look at who the leader is.
Right,
you
know exactly.
I mean, like, literally takes away from any kind of meaningful conversation that can be had. Mm. It shouldn't do, though, which is why we're talking about it now.
Doing the people's work, guys.
Yeah. But I just thought, I know it is the same lines of what we were talking about in terms of Rishi Sunak when he was first appointed. Kind of, I am glad that at least it's not a British Asian person. At least, like, it's not, like, at least it's another ethnic group this time.
Yeah, it is always, like I was going to say, the Tory party are obviously very, very white, but then it's always a lot of Indians, to be honest with you, like, specifically, like, any ethnic minorities that are there, like, they do tend to be South Asian, specifically Indian, so, like,
yeah,
a bit of heat off of you guys.
But I've just got a couple of things that Kemi has said over the past couple of
Yeah, I can't. Days. I'm really, like, holding my tongue. I can't speak completely unreservedly about my opinion of her because it's not a great opinion. In fact, it's a very bad opinion. So
yeah. So I'm just going to give you the facts here. And just to let you know, if there's anyone out there who is kind of seeing this as a win for people of colour, for diversity, for representation, whatever, maybe have a bit of a rethink after hearing this. So some of the stuff that she said: maternity pay has gone too far and is excessive, as is minimum wage, and it's basically burdening businesses. I think a lot of her kind of stance has been that, oh, we need to stop doing XYZ because it's harming the economy. She's very pushing that, which it's on brand. She wants to change the Equality Act to rewrite the She wants to change the Equality Act to rewrite the definition of sex and allow organizations to ban transgender women from single sex spaces, including hospital wards and sports events. On the topic of race, she's been quoted as saying, "Britain is the best place in the world to be black. The UK's wealth is not due to colonial history or racial privilege."
Oh, for God's sake.
Also, a lot of people pointed out that during the riots that we experienced this summer, she was quite noticeably silent throughout that whole time. And she posted several times on Twitter during that time, but about different stuff, such as the Gender Recognition Act, none of them actually addressing the actual violence that was happening. Her main comment was, she said, oh, there's not been enough integration, rather than focusing on the actual, like, fact that people were literally scared to go out of their houses for fear of being attacked.
Uh-huh.
She has praised Israel's amazing defense tactics and said that she's very sympathetic to the Israeli argument because they're always criticized. I wonder why.
I really wonder why.
She also, in a pamphlet distributed, argued that conditions such as anxiety and autism have gone from something that people should work on themselves as individuals to something that society, schools, and employers have had to adapt around. Basically implying that if you've got something like anxiety or have been diagnosed with conditions such as autism, that's something that you need to work on yourself, and, like, it's not the state's issue to basically help you live your life, basically, which a lot of people on the spectrum have found issue with that. And finally, in regards to climate, she's argued that the idea of going net zero is making energy more expensive and hurting our economy.
So it's one thing to It's one thing to put a person of colour, like a black woman, as the head of a party, like the Tory party. It's another thing then to get her to parrot party lines, to actively parrot party lines. Nothing that she said, as problematic as we think it is kind of is an aberration of the Tory line, essentially, you know? And that's why it's so specifically dangerous, because it's like all of these beliefs are now being fortified through her and almost in a way kind of like legitimized, right? Because it's like the people who exist on the margins of society, people like Kemi, black women, for example, who might speak up and be like, you know, the Tory party are oppressive and they're, you know, bigoted and all of these things. Now they can privilege Kemi's voice over them because, oh, well, she's also from a marginalised section of society and this is what she's saying. Like, it, you know, do you get what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, she must, like, it must be fine if she is saying
she's
it.
She's saying
like,
it, exactly.
Surely she wouldn't say otherwise.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But, like, again, it is not even an issue of, like, there's this is kind of where we need to start talking about race and class, like, in conjunction with race, right? Like, and it was the exact same thing with Rishi Sunak, where it was like, ostensibly from the outside, like, yes, he might be a person of colour, but his structural class position is vastly different than the vast majority of people of colour in this country, right? Because he is so rich. A similar thing with Kemi. Like, she had a very privileged upbringing. Like it's her structure.
I saw, like a Maca post or something earlier where it was, like, that she'd had, like, it was an article that was literally, the title was How Kemi's Tough Upbringing in Nigeria.
Oh my God, I actually screenshotted that today and sent it to my friend. And I was like, they're throwing all of you lot under the bus. Don't let it happen. But the truth is that she didn't, she grew up in, like, Wimbledon, like, had a very privileged, like, cushy, like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's...
I think it's also is possible, like, as well, like, when we talk about class, that people is possible as well for people to come from lower class backgrounds and also transitioned and then.
So it's what you call a class traitor, guys. It's what you call a class traitor. Objectively, that's the term.
Yeah,
I'm not calling her that. I'm just saying that's the term.
Yeah, so it is possible as well. Like, if anyone was to ever make the argument that, oh, how can you say that? Look at where they grew up. Well, it's like, that doesn't mean that they can't then go and actually choose to represent what they now either they associate with or what they want to associate with. Exactly. Yeah, so. I mean, it'd be interesting. I personally just found it quite weird. I like see clips pop up on TikTok and stuff of PMQs and like Parliament and stuff like that. And I keep seeing.
Sorry, I'm just trying to move my mic. Continue. I'm just trying to make it this way, but it doesn't work.
What do you want to do?
Like tilt the mic. I can't do it. Ah, there we go. Ah, there we go. There we go.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Right. I'm quite surprised because I keep on seeing on TikTok all these clips of like PMQs, people debating stuff in Parliament, whatever. And it's kind of like, I keep seeing clips, for example, of Rishi Sunak, because up until this morning, he has actually still been the leader of the Conservative Party. Seeing clips of him like you doing their usual like, oh, the Labour Party, this, that, the other. And I'm just like, how can you be bothered to like still be going on about like, oh, they've done this, like you've literally just been voted out and like you're still like, you know what I mean, like
that, you know, a lot of people, like, this is what I think about politicians, like if you're kind of like a semi-disgraced politician, like just retire, like hang your head in shame a little bit, do you know what I mean? Like there's politicians, that's why like it's crazy when you see the fact that these people don't actually really face repercussions, because it's like they can do the maddest things and then turn around and still be out in the public eye in politics, like you know what I mean, like still involved.
Yeah, it's mad. Sigh. Anyway,
I wonder, do you think there's now a real possibility of a black woman becoming the next UK prime minister?
What you mean, because Kemi is the leader,
as in like there's a real possibility she's the leader now in the next election if the Tories win, like she's...
Yeah, but I don't see there being another election anytime soon. I mean, who knows what's going to happen, but realistically, like, I don't, unless something catastrophic happens with Labour, I really doubt that they would feel the need to call an election.
No, but as in it will happen every 5 years anyway. So
yeah,
like...
I get what you're saying, but I also, for some reason in the back of my head, I also feel like I can't see Kemi lasting that long.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the reason why I say that is because aside from... what we've just said about how she's kind of, in our opinion, being used as like a puppet parrot, whatever you want to call it, I also feel like she will probably face like various kind of struggles as being
absolutely a black woman in that position.
And do I think that maybe
the party will protect her? Probably not.
Yeah, so I think the moment that it comes to needing to throw her under the bus, that or like, yeah, I just basically can't see her lasting 5 years personally, in my opinion. But I don't know, maybe I'll be proved wrong, but I also think as well, I'd be surprised if the public forgets.
I mean, the rate of like the Tory party leader turnover, like they are literally in and out, is a bit of a revolving door
probably,
at the
that's
minute.
That's probably why in my head I'm like, yes,
it's not gonna last. Yeah,
yeah, we'll see. But also, again, I doubt that the public would necessarily vote back in the Tories after 5 years. But you
say,
never
do you
know.
Think so? I don't, yeah.
You never know. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 5 years?
I mean, I do think a part of why they lost at this election was because people are racist and don't want to vote for Rishi Sunak. Partly. And that might also be the case in the next election if Kemi is still the leader. So
true.
Who knows?
Who knows? Yeah. On the topic of Bad Vibes Island, let's also talk about this now. Fertility rate in the UK dropped to an all-time low. So women in England and Wales have had an average of 1.44 children between 2022 and 2023. This is the lowest rate on record. Only 591,072 babies were born in 2023. This is fewer than any year since 1977. So in 2023, fewer babies than any year since 1977 were born, with a fall of more than 14,000 on the previous year. So it is like quite...
40,000. Fall of 40,000.
14,000. But it's still a significant amount.
Yeah.
And
everyone's kind of like scratching their heads, going like, "Oh, I wonder why. I wonder why people aren't having any kids. Look at the state of the economy. Like, there's a direct correlation between the fact that I saw an article the other day that was like the UK is now moving into a low growth economy. Like, there's a direct correlation. People are struggling out here. Like, what do you mean have kids? Like, people are, I do think it's a crisis of many things. Firstly, like, the cost of living crisis absolutely has like impacted people. People are leaving home much later. People are really struggling to get on the property ladder. People are struggling to kind of like make meaningful kind of money, like from their jobs, from their day jobs. Those all things have an impact. I also think there's a crisis in maybe like culture and community as well, like the kind of maybe I think as well this is, it varies from like demographics as well, but people are increasingly, I feel like, talking about the dating pool and how awful it is and how much they're struggling. I do think that also has an impact. I think maybe people are kind of settling down perhaps later on in life. Yeah. I think they're all linked, again, because economically, but also because like culturally, I don't think that people have as much time perhaps to invest in relationships and family building, where they're so concerned with just kind of being able to live, pay for the roof over their head and pay their bills and eat, you know. So
yeah.
it's not there's nothing to scratch your head about. Look at the state of the economy, like that's why. Back in the day, like people always say, back in the day, like your parents will be having however many kids on like whatever salary and just be able to make it work. And that's a big part of that is obviously because like the cost of living was much lower. But I think people had networks then to rely on others, you know, like there was a bit more of a village. Where I do think that as the economy kind of becomes like more difficult to kind of, as the economy makes life more difficult for people, a lot of people are losing networks as well.
Yeah. It is interesting, though, because I've just had the thought of that I can't see necessarily the British Asian community, for example. I haven't seen the stats, but I would imagine that this maybe doesn't affect them as much. Because I don't think that... I can still see, like, British Asian, like, particularly... Muslims, for example, I think we can all agree that I know, like, I think of our age, I think the number of people that I know that are married, the majority of them would be from a Muslim background.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, I like maybe like having, actually having kids, like that sort of thing, which is becoming increasingly like abnormal for someone of our age to like.
But that's what I mean by it's cultural. Like a lot of it is cultural. Oh my God. Like, sorry, Carlos, finish your thought.
No. So I was just saying like, I find it quite interesting the fact that is that going to be reflected, say, in the year group, for example, of kids? Like, do you know what I mean? Is there going to be like 20 years from now, is it going to be majority like brown kids?
Like, you know what? Like, I want to expand on that point about like it depends on demographics. Absolutely. Like the Muslim community or like South Asians are, I do think, still getting married at the same rate, still having children at a very similar rate. I do think a lot of that is also because, like, obviously we have culture to stabilize the other factors that impact us. Culture is kind of like the stabilizer, and also we also still have big family units where you're able to rely on other people, and therefore like the impact of having children is perhaps lessened. I, however, have noticed a huge difference, a seismic difference between, so where I went to high school, it's in a suburb of like kind of South Manchester. It is very kind of like white, kind of affluent area, and a lot of people that I went to school with have kind of stayed in that same area, have partnered up with people in that same area, have they're very stable, kind of seemingly they are very stable, you know. A lot of them have got partners again from the same area. They've ended up kind of buying houses and settling down. That area, that kind of suburban area, that white affluent suburban area, people are settling down, they are buying houses, they're getting married, and they're having children. Like, I go on Instagram or Facebook every single day, and it's like someone from my high school is married, or they've got a mortgage, they've bought a house, they're on their first kid, they're on their second kid, some of them are even on their third kid, right? And then I compare that to my friends like in London. So like more than half my friends are either Londoners or like live in London, and they're kind of there for like, a lot of them are there for like career purposes and stuff like that. I compare them to London, and like a lot of them are like struggling. Truthfully, a lot of them are struggling, the ones in London. And I think that has a massive, massive impact, because obviously if you're living in the suburbs and you're from a certain kind of like financial background, you're gonna have a bit more of a steady start anyway into like your adulthood. Like a lot of people who my age who have bought houses, their parents have paid their deposits and things like that, you know, and they've found someone in their local community that they, you know, the person that they went to school with, and they've been able to settle down with them, and it's just kind of like a run-of-the-mill thing. Whereas I think a lot of my friends in London, they don't necessarily have the same kind of leg up, because living in London is so different to living in like a suburb up north. And I see that, like, my friends in London, some of them are like, even forget about settling down and having kids, some of them are like, they're massive commitment phobes. I 100% believe that the geography has a massive impact on their attitude and their kind of like perception of relationships. A lot of them are not even trying to settle down. They're like, because to them, they're so aware of the strain that they're already under living as like an independent single person in London. The idea of starting a family, buying a house, having kids, it's just so unimaginable to them that it ends up reflecting in their dating practices. You know, like, it is crazy, the difference I always notice.
Yeah, so I suppose it's kind of like we might see a...
That's where class plays a difference.
Yeah, so I suppose like we'll see a kind of demographic in like a couple of years, however, in terms of schools, where like maybe in the suburbs where you were just talking about, right, in like South Manchester, it's like majority, like there is like a white middle class like age group, but then also like at the same time, maybe in London, for example, it'll be majority people of color, right, and like it'll be like, but the middle bit, it's like
it is so interesting.
It will be missing kind
of
thing.
It's very interesting how it will just change the kind of like future demographic. Because also, like, I remember someone who's from Croydon, like in London, talking about how there have been loads of like primary schools shutting down, like in the area in Croydon. So, like, I mean, it adds up, I guess. So it's very interesting, honestly, like profoundly fascinating how these things impact, like, so many things.
Maybe they'll start paying us to have kids.
Oh, that would be fantastic. That would be fantastic. Oh yeah, I'd love that.
Hold out until then.
Yeah.
A final thing on the Bad Vibes Island note. I saw this clip, actually, and I wanted to discuss it. It's this Muslim football player. I think she's a Somali, sorry. So it's this Somali Muslim football player, and she basically was not allowed to play football because she refused to wear shorts.
What country?
In the UK. So she was prevented from playing in a match because she wants to wear tracksuit bottoms rather than shorts.
Right, so here we have it. Here we have it. Thank you, Carlos, for bringing this up. Here we have it. The calls for, you know, the kind of self-lauding. Oh, my God, we're such a multiracial, progressive society. We have a black woman as a leader of a major mainstream political party, and meanwhile another black woman is being literally oppressed from wearing what she wants to wear. She didn't even have the freedom to choose her own clothes. So once again, these groups are not monoliths. These demographics are not monoliths, because I bet you this woman, obviously, it's first and foremost a charge of Islamophobia. Your religion plays a massive difference, because even though we've seen for example, this kind of, I want to go back to the point, sorry, I'm backtracking a little bit, but even though we've seen, like, you know, some people of colour figureheads of, like, political parties, I'm trying to think, like, I don't think there have been any actively Muslim ones. Like, Sajid Javid, I know, has, like, a Muslim background, but, like, not outwardly practising.
Yeah.
You know, so I do think there's something really to be said. And that's not for nothing either, because there's, in the Labour Party, the amount of Muslim MPs there are is insane. There's so many, or like councillors and whatever. So I do think, yeah, Islamophobia, like the presence of like Islamophobia, I do think changes everything. Like in this case, for example.
Yeah. So Iqra Ismail, who captained Somalia in 2019, said that...
Oh, so she's not just a little footballer.
No. This is like, she's like a, like, I think this is semi-pro. So
yeah, she ain't a little five-a-side footballer.
So she signed for Regent's Park grassroots team, United Dragons FC. She's 24 from West London, and she was basically meant to be playing her first game on Sunday. However, she was told by the referee that she had to wear club shorts, tracksuit bottoms were not allowed. However, since this has blown up on social media, the FA has apologised to her, and she's been told that she can wear tracksuit bottoms when she next takes to the field. But I just...
Why does she have to kick up the storm to do it? Like, exactly. There's going to be plenty of... Like, it takes a lot of strength to come forward and contest a decision like that on a kind of, global stage, I guess. Because there's also the fear of, like, you'll be blacklisted, you'll be punished, because these things do happen, you know? Mm. And you can't expect that every single woman who is, like, discriminated against is going to have that strength to do it, because they shouldn't have to.
Or a platform
to do it, even. Or that even if they do it, that it will take off, that it will get enough media traction and social media traction to prompt the FA to make a decision, because that decision should never have been made in the first place. People shouldn't have to fight for their rights. That should be a given.
And I mean, this is even before going into the fact of why does it matter?
Why it's such textbook. It's like, it's almost offensive, because it's like, it's such a rudimentary form of like Islamophobia. Like, be a bit more imaginative. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, she has to show her legs. Like, be a bit more imaginative. Like, this was the kind of Islamophobia we were dealing with like 20 years ago. Come on.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm glad that, obviously, that the post has got traction and that she's been allowed, but I think it's just so sad.
Yeah, if you know it's wrong, why do it in the first place?
And also the fact that her whole, like, footballing experience is going to be, like, kind of tainted by that first.
Yeah.
Like,
true.
Yeah, it's just not...
It's not nice of her.
Definitely not. Moving over to the rest of the world, and kind of on the flip side of how Islam is being kind of weaponized to actually oppress women... we've got in Afghanistan, the Taliban has clamped down even more than they already have been doing over there. So for those that aren't aware, back in August, the Taliban basically implemented these virtue or morality laws that required women to fully cover their bodies, including their faces, whenever in public. Other stuff that they were banned from was singing, reciting, reading aloud publicly. The reason being that their voices are considered intimate and should remain unheard. Now, the most recent development in this has been that the Taliban has introduced a rule whereby if an adult female prays and another female passes by, she must not pray loudly enough for them to hear.
If another female passes by?
Yeah, so basically like implying what that is... they're not even allowed to speak to each other.
I don't understand, like, what is the actual logic in that? I really don't get it.
Neither. Like, it's just, I feel like it's just how further can they take it. So their Minister for the Promotion of Virtue and Prevention of Vice said that even when an adult female prays and another female passes by, she must not pray loudly enough for them to hear.
Do you know, can I just say something? You know what the Taliban is? I feel like a lot of people kind of posit the Taliban as like an issue of misogyny, which it absolutely is, an issue of patriarchy, which absolutely is. But I think more than that, it's a crisis of masculinity. Mm. Like, it is this kind of uber... Like, I would say compensation, and it's like, what are you compensating for? Because this is not, like, let's kind of think in on their terms for a bit. Obviously, the way they're thinking of things is in that traditional kind of conventional gender roles, that this is what a man is, and this is what a man has a right to do, and this is what a woman is, and this is what her place is, right? Like, the mark of a man is not the extent to which you can oppress a woman. In fact, in Islam, it's the absolute duty of a man to uphold the rights and the respect of and for women, you know. So like the Taliban, if they're quoting like Islamic kind of reasons for doing what they're doing, it's I mean, I've said it before, it's not Islamic. Like, it's such a bastardization of what Islam is. It's such a perversion of what Islam is, that it's ludicrous to me that they could even try to use that to justify it. There's nowhere written in the Quran at all that a woman cannot pray, or to the point where she's like, what a silly, like, it's so specific, it's so silly. Like, it is because of these people's is like violent like interpretation and like really twisted interpretation of the Quran. But like, that's the case because they have a crisis of masculinity.
I would agree with you there, because now that I'm thinking about it, I am just like, why are these people not focused maybe on their own development? Do you know what I mean?
Like, but that's the thing. But that's, like, and that's such a typical thing. Like a lot of people who look at Muslim men as being like, or like they take the actions of Muslim men and conflate that onto like all of Islam and be like, oh my God, Islam is such a patriarchal, like, and misogynistic religion. And it's like, the actual fact of it is not. Like, for example, modesty laws. Yes, in Islam we have modesty laws. Women are supposed to be covered up and retain their modesty, but so are men. So are men. Like, men also have very specific laws. And like, there's literal hadiths, there's literally stories of the Prophet, peace be upon him, where he's out in public and like, you know, there's a woman who is like revealed and so exposed in some kind of way. And the Prophet instructs his male companions, lower your gaze. He doesn't say anything to the woman. He instructs the male companions, lower your gaze. You know, like, that is the literal example of our Prophet. Like, what higher, what more exalted example can you possibly get? You know, like, think of where our Prophet was and think of where the Taliban are. Like, like, it's
if they are going to kind of go down this route, it should be that they're indoctrinating the male population to be, okay, this is how you act in these situations. You need to make sure you do X, Y, Z.
Right.
Not
because that's what Islam actually teaches. Like, Islam teaches both what is the duty of the woman and what is the duty of the man, right? And how you both are supposed to behave, right? And it's not like to kind of like oppress women to the point of like. And you know what was crazy as well is that I follow a travel influencer, and last year, or it might have been earlier this year, she went to Afghanistan, and obviously like under Taliban rule and whatever. And there were instances where, because you have to have like a guide with you, and there were instances where she's kind of, as a woman, like openly, like the people that she's with are men. Other men, you know, like that is kind of by the Taliban perception of things, free mixing would not be allowed. And yet I'm seeing real life examples of this like Western woman, white Western woman coming in and being able to like just hang out with the Taliban for like a week as they like kind of show her around the country, and like they're openly eating food together and openly spending this time together, and they're going to like this show. There was this show that they went to or whatever. And it's like, oh my God. And have you seen recently as well, It's called Bachabazi. It's a practice in Afghanistan. There's been like a documentary about it. Bachabazi is essentially the practice where little boys, like underage boys, get dressed as girls, and then they get basically shot full of like opiates. And that this is trigger warning, by the way. This is horrendous. And then they get passed around to like the Taliban men to basically abuse and rape. Like you lot are the beholders of Islamic morality. Like be so for real. Be so for real. Like that, it just says it all, right? Like that is it's these are not custodians of virtue. These people are not custodians of, you know, the kind of sanctity of women and all of these things. They're not protecting women. They are just plain and simple misogynists. That's it.
Yeah.
It's awful. Like I think you guys can go on YouTube and type in like Bachabazi, and then there's like a documentary about it. It's really sad.
It is sad. And again.
But to go from that to being like women can't even like talk loud enough. Meanwhile, you're literally raping little boys. It's crazy.
Yeah. It is disgusting. And it's the reminder of how did we get here again?
Talking about the Taliban? Or...
No.
How did the Taliban get there? Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was the US.
Yeah. Spoiler warning.
Spoiler alert.
Moving on to elsewhere in Western Asia. I actually wanted to speak about this because it was actually my friend said to me that they actually saw Nasima and Bee Poet, and they saw her speaking.
Shout out,
speaking about this issue, and they were like, "Oh, I think you should talk about it on Manga Masala," because I actually like found it quite interesting what she was saying. And it basically relates to what's going on in Sudan at the moment, and I think we've briefly touched upon like what is going on there, but essentially in April 2023, war broke out between the Sudanese armed forces. And
after like many years.
Yeah,
there is a
big context behind this, but the most recent is that war broke out between Sudanese armed forces and the Rapid Support Forces, and these are rival factions of the military government of Sudan. I think we've seen some horrific stuff over the past,
and as a result, the people have been suffering. Basically, it's been awful.
Like I think like one of the most recent things that I saw was. There's been reports of 130 Sudanese women committing mass suicide. Sorry, again, trigger warning. Mass suicide because they don't want to be raped by the RSF.
That is heartbreaking. I honestly.
Yeah. So this is the stage where it is horrific. What's going on there at the moment? However, you might be wondering, well, how is this being allowed to go on? Like, where are these people getting the resources from, etc.? There are multiple reports that suggest or allege that the UAE is actually prolonging the war by arming the RSF. So there's been pressure on the United Nations Security Council as well, because they basically keep delaying this report.
Because they have a stake in Sudan's gold mines.
Yeah. Basically. So basically, in the United Nations Security Councils, they basically have these findings that document credible allegations that the UAE is supplying the RSF with weapons and ammunition. And The Guardian have said that also that the UK actually... has been blocking discussions of the UAE's involvement in the Security Council for months, including after Labour took over. So this isn't a Tory thing. This is like...
it's the UK government.
Yeah. And like Halima said, the reason is Abu Dhabi has a big interest in Sudan's agricultural and mineral resources. And their like kind of leg into that is through the RSF. So they're essentially funding the RSF to continue this... terror
being
that
able
they're
to
enacting
mine, yeah.
So that they're able to like tap into the resources over there. And I think the thing that Nasima was kind of pointing out was I think it's been good over the past year how many people have actually opened their eyes and educated themselves on Israel, for example, and their oppression and genocide of the Palestinian people. And obviously, it's not been good what's happening, but it's been good to like see people maybe educate themselves and actually call out what Israel are doing. However, it is like sort of a bit of a bandwagon thing, in the sense that people don't necessarily think, okay, well, if this is happening here, is there any other instances of oppression that are happening in the world? And the answer is yes.
I think as a result of what's happened with Israel-Palestine, I think a lot of people have turned their attention towards like Sudan and Congo and things like that. But I think where people fall short is they're not able to draw lines. They're not able to connect dots.
Yeah.
That's, I think, what the bigger problem is that lack of kind of like insight into actually, the Sudanese people are not existing, are not suffering in a vacuum. It's not that they're suffering for no reason. That they're kind of the people who are continuing this and facilitating this are not invisible imaginary people. They're actually governments of a place that many people love to visit, a favorite holiday destination from British people at least.
Yeah, and this is the thing, like for example, I think we've both been to the UAE. You've been to the UAE before, right? I know.
Yeah.
So like we've been to the UAE. I understand why people would enjoy it. It's not necessarily
I hate it. Have I spoken about it?
Yeah, but it's not necessarily for me or for you, but I can understand why, like I can understand the appeal, like for certain demographics of people in terms of the luxury and whatever. I'm not saying you do.
Not a bit of me.
But I understand why people, that would be of appeal to people. However, like what people don't necessarily realize is when you're going on holiday and spending money, like in the UAE, you are essentially funding what is going on in Sudan, and people will be more than happy to like go and do whatever over there, but then don't actually think about where their money's actually going.
And I think it's that kind of like cognitive dissonance that allows for a failing of personal responsibilities. And that's what I mean when I say that people aren't connecting the dots. Like, okay, cool, you're aware that something is happening in Sudan. I think a lot of people then don't take it upon themselves to actually go and research what's happening. And I do think anti-blackness has a part to play in that, because the victims are black Muslims. Anti-blackness and Islamophobia, largely black Muslims. That has a massive part to play in it. But also it's then, if you actually know and you find out, it then I think really puts you in a position to exercise your own personal responsibilities and essentially, I think, boycott, you know, the Gulf in general, or the UAE specifically, as a holiday destination. And I think that's the bit that people aren't necessarily willing to do, you know, and that's the thing that needs to be done. You know, like you can't, I know we've spoken about the UAE before, and we've always said that obviously it's a very problematic place in terms of like the human rights allegations and the fact that a lot of the country was built on essentially slave labor from kind of ethnic minorities who face a lot of racism and oppression in those countries. And then we have also said the other part of it, which is like, there's a limit to how much you can kind of like morally posture yourself on this issue, because we also live in the imperial heart, or like kind of there's many governments across the world who are equally as problematic, and we still actively visit those governments and those countries and blah, 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 blah. But then at some point, I do think it crosses a line and you kind of have to take a stance, because what is going on in Sudan is like uniquely very, very horrifying and harrowing, you know, like it is a massive wide scale humanitarian crisis. It's not just like, oh, the government are a little bit morally dubious or whatever. That's not what it is. It's like, it is a war on people. It's a war on humanity. And I think it requires a bit more of a decisive stance than it's been getting so far.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what you're saying is right in terms of, like, not to say that like what's going on in Palestine should have got any less attention, but I think ultimately, like, people do tend to kind of just pick and choose as to what they want to actually divert their attention towards, which, like you said, probably is to do with anti-blackness as well.
Anti-blackness and Islamophobia, because the reason why people are even now have really turned their attention to what's going on with Palestine, obviously it's because we've not seen kind of attacks on this kind of level before, but also because you have to remember the original victims in all of this were those Israelis. Like, this all happened because the media was reporting on October the 7th and positing the Israelis as the victims. And that's why it made like international news. The Palestinians were nowhere to be seen in the media narrative of any of this. And it's only because people have come forward and been like, actually, this is what the truth is, this is what's going on, and kind of shed light on what's happening, that is then turned into, you know, kind of more widespread sympathy for Palestine, which has then extended to Sudan and Congo and those kinds of places. But it's not a kind of a concession given for the sake of like human empathy.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
And
but yeah, I would say like just be very mindful. I would say personally, my personal recommendation is like don't go, don't support the government, don't support like the tourism industry, don't help the economy, which will inevitably then get funded into, you know, the RSF. But that's what my personal stance is.
Yeah.
It's not worth it anyway. It's rubbish over there. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
For me personally, the only appeal is the guaranteed sun. But there are multiple other places that you can guarantee for that. So
lots of places.
Yeah.
I'm really hungry. Guys, we went for a meal last week, me, Carlos, Simran, our mango masala meal. We went to Istanbul in
Best meal ever.
It actually was. Not the first time we've eaten together, but every time we eat, we're always like just eating at Carlos's. So it's the first time we went out to a restaurant to eat properly. Mm-hmm. And we went to Istanbul. I don't know if any of you guys know. I didn't know there's one in Withington because I usually go to the one in Cheetham Hill, which is like my favourite Turkish place. I didn't really love Turkish food before I went to Istanbul. I was always kind of like meh so-and-so about it. And then the Istanbul and Cheetah Mill was like a family favourite for us. And we'd go all the time. I didn't realise there was one in Withington. But I put Carlos on and now apparently he told me this is like the show he can't stop thinking about it.
It was really good.
Oh, you took the food home as well. Was it nice the next day or not really?
I actually had it later on that day. But I mean, the thing is, there wasn't actually like,
that much. Yeah.
It was more like, it was basically the salad.
Rice and salad.
Because we didn't eat the salad.
We didn't. We didn't even touch it. We actually didn't touch it. We didn't even touch it.
It was still nice, though. And I have been thinking about it this whole time. Since
I really want Turkish bread. I might go to I need to take my mum to Longsight. I might stop at Venus. Do you know Venus?
No.
Venus, it's on like you know, like Birchfield Park, isn't it? You know the where you go that way into Rusham and that way into town.
Yeah.
It's on that corner.
Okay.
Venus, you should go. They've got if you like kebabs and stuff, they do Turkish food there. It's more like takeaway Turkish, but like it's still nice.
Okay,
I might actually go and get some bread. Oh yeah, I would love some bread and some like chili sauce and some like garlic. Oh yeah, I might go get some.
Right.
I'm really hungry.
Yeah.
You should go back. Go back with me, Anchor.
Yeah, sure. Get that platter for two.
That platter, oh, that was good, wasn't it?
Back to the world and all its problems. Got this time next week, we'll know who the next president of the United States is going to be.
Oh, for God's sake.
Either outcome, not particularly keen of, but yeah, it is what it is. But I think the thing that we wanted to discuss in particular was Sacha Baron Cohen's guest slot on... I always get them confused if it's Jimmy Fallon.
It's one of them.
One of the Jimmys, yeah. Basically, he was on American TV late at night and he basically was being interviewed about the topic of the election came up and they were like, it had clearly been planned beforehand, but it was like, oh, do you want to, like, what if Ali G was asked about the upcoming election? And then they were like, oh, like, what about if Borat was asked about the upcoming election? And he basically put on these different personas that he's been known to do in the past. I think it's Borat in particular that is just really...
It is awful. It is absolutely awful. I think we all grew... There was a period in kind of, like, British... Well, I think it was not period. It was up until recently. I think a lot of people kind of let a lot of racism kind of that is like kind of entrenched in British society and media in a way where it's kind of almost like sanitized and like rendered a bit harmless. You know, Have you seen Come Fly with Me?
Yeah,
like it is. It's blackface. It's Indian face. It is Taj from Bradford face. It is yellow face. It is like they were cosplaying all types of ethnicities. But I'm gonna put my hands up and before I understood how like detrimental those things were, I did find it funny, you know, like it was entrenched in British society and that kind of like British humor in a way where like these things were just funny. But I think obviously you've grown up now and like you kind of realize that, like, you know, conversations surrounding race and racism have changed a lot, you know, over the last decade or whatever. And I think you realise now, like, just how problematic and harmful and detrimental those things are. And that understanding, I think, really extends into this persona of Borat, who has been kind of like a very household kind of fan favourite. He is essentially this kind of Kazakhstani character who really plays into the stereotype of, like, well, being Kazakhstani. But the amount of people I know that have come forward and been like, oh my, Carlos, you said it just now where you were like, I didn't actually realise it was from Kazakhstan, or like Kazakhstan was like a real place.
I knew Kazakhstan.
No, but that it was actually from that.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I knew what Borat was, but I didn't realize that the whole thing was set as him specifically being from Kazakhstan. I thought, he's just. I think I could recognize that what was going on was wrong and what it was alluding to, but I didn't realize that. Oh, they're literally
Link to Kazakhstan, exactly. Like, but a lot of people also didn't even know that Kazakhstan is a real country or whatever. Like, because I guess, especially in the UK, where they don't really have that much of like a presence, I would say. Like, maybe the numbers of Kazakhstani people are quite low in the UK. They're not being represented in any other way other than through Borat, and that is an awful representation to have. Way he kind of like flattens that entire country and like presents them as like this super backwards, like barbaric Neanderthal like kind of society of people. It is awful. And the worst thing is that he has no relation to that part of he's not Kazakhstani. Not that it would make it any better. Well, it might make it slightly better if he was from Kazakhstan himself, you know, but he's not. He's literally not. And like the crazy thing is as well is that Sacha Baron Cohen, I really, really do not like him. He is a very, very problematic, like pro-Israeli, kind of like staunch Zionist, has spoken awfully about the Palestinian cause, you know? And it's like, you kind of like, and the thing is as well, like he comes forward and he screams anti-Semitism. Like a lot of people who have been kind of, when he sees, as has been the culture recently with a lot of kind of Israeli people, where they've come forward and they've conflated criticisms of Israel as being anti-Semitic. Sacha Baron Cohen has been one of those people who, you know, has used his platform to be like, this is anti-Semitic. And blah, 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 blah. So it's like, wow, you understand racism and kind of discrimination when it's comes in the form of what you perceive to be anti-Semitic, but you don't understand it when it extends to you playing the character of Borat.
Yeah.
Like, where has like racism gone? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, literally just to say some of the stuff that he was spouting out, he just was making jokes about people eating cats and dogs and, Kamala Harris, as a woman, a person of colour, and a person who's married to a Jew, I advise you not to come to Kazakhstan. You've already, like, all of these crimes are basically punishable by death.
What do you know about Kazakhstan? Like, they act like, this is what I mean, like, they act like they're such a backwards, like, barbaric society. Have you been? Apart from to film your show, Borat, have you been?
Like, also, if you're going to be so pro-Israeli, why are you not, like, pointing fun at what they're doing? Because what they're doing is very barbaric right now.
Like, right. But that's my point, right? Like, human rights exist when it comes to Israelis. Anti-Semitism, and discrimination exists when it comes to Israelis. But none of that exists when it comes to other demographics of like marginalized people in the world. I really, really do not like him.
But I think the other thing as well is that I was just.
You're not even funny. It's not even funny. Your jokes aren't even funny.
No. He's just weird.
Yeah, you're weird. He's weird.
My personal opinion, is quite creepy.
I find him creepy as well. Yeah. In my opinion, he looks creepy and weird as well.
I think also...
Leave Kazakhstan alone.
Yeah, literally, what have they ever done to you? And I think I was disappointed as well. Not overly surprised, but disappointed to actually see. Because... like, Jimmy would have known what was going to happen there.
Oh, yeah, they just platformed like, that. Yeah, but that's my point. It's like people don't actually understand. Because, to the white Western world, the rest of the world and other ethnic demographics exist as, like, caricatures to them. They don't ever think that, like, these are real people. This is a real country. They're just here for our entertainment. That's really how they look at Borat and like his representation of Kazakhstan and Kazakhstan people, you know, and that's why like it's allowed, because that has been a source of entertainment for such a long time.
Yeah.
Sigh.
Big sigh. And that's without even talking about the election itself, which...
Well, I don't want to say anything. There's not much to talk about.
No.
That's crazy. It's actually... Who do you think is going to win? Do you know what? I like deactivated Twitter
Literally deactivated everything.
I deactivated all my social media because like, I told myself I was going to lock in after I came back from a holiday and I didn't lock in. So I was like, I need to force myself to lock in. So I deactivated all my socials. But like before then, Elon Musk was on my timeline all the time. Like he is literally, like I don't follow him. And yet I'm seeing all of his
so
tweets.
So much. Like why am I like seeing all of this like,
pro-Trump
extreme American right-wing stuff mixed in with like Glee and EastEnders and ultimately gay so Twitter. Funny. That's what my Twitter so is. Why funny. Is that randomly coming up? Into like
it's hilarious. But what I was going to say is like with regards to the US election, how is he, I don't know, like I feel like there should be some level of like, there should be some red tape around some of what, I get free speech and all of that, but it's like your platform, I don't know, man. Like, you're the... You own X. You own Twitter. You own X. And, like, you're on here using it to basically peddle a load of propaganda. Mm. Like, I don't know if that should be allowed. Like, isn't that, like, a conflict of interest?
Yeah.
Like, you're manipulating your... And, like, there's no doubt that he's manipulating the algorithms because why do I keep seeing
him? Why are we as two very much... The opposite of right-wing... British people
seeing like, Elon Musk's I was gonna use a term there, his beep riding for Trump. Why are we seeing this on my timeline? As Carlos says, I just want to see some light-hearted memes.
You know, it's so funny as well because literally earlier today he quote tweeted a video of Jennifer Lopez who was speaking in advocation of Kamala Harris, and he was like, oh yeah, the West won't fall for this like propaganda, blah blah blah. I was like, what do you
so
think?
What are you peddling?
Like
the fact
that I'm seeing this, what are you doing? Like
it's crazy, but I don't know, it just doesn't sit right with me. I just don't think it should be allowed.
I
feel like there should be some kind of conflict of interest because he's literally, he has this huge platform and he's like, he is actually actively messing with the algorithms, and like that will no doubt, we've seen through like all the stuff that happened with Cambridge Analytica, like how these things really materially impact government and democracies.
I mean it's interesting as well, what do you think about the idea of public figures like celebrities
endorsing I was gonna bring this up actually. I thought about,
because I've personally feel like it seems like so much, particularly this election, it seems to be such a big thing in America. But when I thought about our general election, for example, I feel like our celebrities are quite quiet. Like
that's so funny that you said that, because I actually thought about it because I saw Beyonce had advocated and I thought to bring up on the show and I completely forgot. I do think it's very interesting because like firstly this election, I don't think anyone was enthused. Like people were not galvanized for in the UK for our election at all. Like whereas in the US it is like it is very different, but we don't really have celebrity endorsements. Like we have small like I remember like a load of rap artists and grime artists had come forward for like Jeremy Corbyn back in 2019, but like I don't like that was the only time I'd really seen that, and I don't think we have a culture of like celebrities coming forward really to endorse political candidates. Whereas in America it's a huge thing, it's massive, whereas they're coming forward and talking at rallies, making donations, all of these things. But then actually it kind of almost like makes it kind of really, it kind of exposes the farce almost of like American politics, because it's a popularity contest. The reason why you're getting these celebrities to advocate for you is so that you could tap into their fan base. Like you're using influencing, and I get the concept of campaigning, and all politics is campaigning, and all elections rest on campaigning, but like it should be political campaigning. You know, rather than leveraging a superstar's fan base. Like that's a popularity contest. It's crazy.
Like literally, why am I seeing like TikToks of like this person is on Trump, this person is for Kamala, like sort of thing. Like it's some sort of which side are you on type.
Right. It's like, I'll vote for whoever my favorite celebrity. It's like it's
which I think could be. It could make sense if, like, say, Beyonce was coming out and was saying, these are the policies of Congress that I really agree with, like, this, that, the other. But she's not doing that. Like, well, it is, like, like, I don't know. For example,
well, that's not why people are tapping in. Yeah. Like, that's not why the public is tapping in. They're not tapping in because they're like, oh my God, Beyonce has made a great point about, you know, America's diplomatic relations. That's not what that is. Yeah. It's because people are, they're fans of Beyonce.
If Beyonce is about to come Laris, then I should.
Beyonce? Yeah. Like, that's literally it. That is it. You know, so it's that's what I mean. It really, really exposes the farce of. And have you seen as well in the US, like how I can't remember what it was, but like Kamala is basically one of their campaigning tactics is to use TikTokers. Like they've been paying TikTokers to basically I can't remember what the specific story was, but basically something to do with they're paying TikTokers, like dancers, TikTok dancers to like black TikTok dancers. And also, have you seen how they're, you know, cold callers, like how, around election time, you get canvases, right, you know, you go canvassing. I saw kind of like examples of people who from Kamala's camp who have been like canvassing for her and they're texting like people, whatever. And they're being like, hey, vote for Kamala. And then the other and the people are kind of like responding by being like, I'm not going to until she announces an arms embargo or she, you know, stands up for Palestine or whatever, whatever their problem is. And then the person will like respond in a super unprofessional manner and be like, well, actually, it's going to be worse under Trump. And what's Trump doing? And blah, 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 blah. Like it's like actual petty back and forth.
Rather than, okay, I respect your opinion, here's why I think that.
Yeah, but I think it's even weird that you're having that one-to-one texting thing. Like, it should just be, like, automated messages. Like, what are you doing? It's so odd to me. Like, it's really odd to me, but, yeah.
We'll see.
It's a different world of politics over there.
Yeah. Madness.
When does the results come out?
I think it's the 5th, so I think we'll find out on Wednesday the 6th.
So that's we're actually pre-recording for next week, so Wednesday it'll be the day. Very it'll be fresh exciting. Hot news. Fresh hot news that day, God.
Right. Can't wait.
I don't think there'll be much difference. I don't think they're as different as people make out, truthfully. I really don't.
I think it's interesting how people are saying that the main way in which this election is split is in regards to what's it called, women's reproductive rights. I think that's the main thing they're saying.
I guess so.
Yeah. Apparently, it's largely women that are saying I'm voting for Kamala because of this.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I think from that front, I don't know.
It might make a bit of a difference.
Yeah, and I don't know because I don't think it's. I think ultimately when they get to that point. I don't particularly understand the way that American politics works, but when you get to that final point, is it not that they are literally just choosing between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris? That's all they can do, right? I'm pretty sure.
I think it's pretty much two-party politics, even if they're out of the... I don't know.
So I don't know. From that perspective, I don't know whether I would, like... If it's going to be one or two of them, then maybe I would vote for them rather than... Because it's not like here where, say, you're voting for someone to represent your constituency actually an option to do that. So from that perspective, I think maybe...
If it's one or the other...
Yeah, then I'd rather the one that's not going to get rid of abortion rights. But it's not... It's still very bleak. Yeah. Like,
it's not a win.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a win, so...
What? Stay tuned for next week, right? If that happens, we retweet the same conversation.
Yeah.
About representation.
That's crazy. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on. Okay, let's do a bit of fun stuff now, because we've had a very, like, news-heavy episode. I'm a Celebrity lineups come out.
Was it?
Yeah, got the likes of some Radio 1 DJs in there. Who? Melvin O'Doom, Dean McCullough. I don't think you'll know them.
Melvin, that was on BBC? Yeah. CBBC?
I don't know if he's on CBBC. Melvin, he's...
A black man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Melvin. Yeah he was on CBBC.
I didn't know he was on CBBC.
Yeah, he was like a children's presenter at first. That's where I know him from.
Melvin O'Doom?
I don't know.
I don't know. Well,
I just know there was a black man called Melvin who was a children's presenter on CBBC.
The thing is, Melvin strikes me as like quite a black name.
Yeah, it is.
So that's why I'm like, is maybe there's two Melvins? I don't know.
Let me see.
But yeah, GK Barry, the podcaster, is on it.
Oh, she's on it.
Him.
Yeah.
I didn't know he started on.
Melvin the Doom, O'Doom. I thought he said the Doom. I thought that was his like DJ name.
Melvin O'Doom.
Oh.
Who else is there? There's Tyrone from Corey. He's going on it.
Yeah, like he was in like Dick and Dom in the Bungalow Basil Swap Show.
I really didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, that's why I remember him.
Yeah, so he is going on it. Who else was there? So like I said, GK Barry, Tyrone from EastEnders.
Don't know.
And then Tulisa.
Oh, interesting. Go on, let's see.
Danny Jones from McFly.
I know the faces.
Maura from Love Island.
Is that Colleen Rooney?
Yeah, Colleen Rooney as well. OT Mabuse from Strictly Come
Where's
Dancing.
He from?
He's Dean McCullough. He's like a new Radio 1 presenter, relatively new.
Who's he?
I don't know. Who else are these? All these people. The older people, I don't think we necessarily know. But I think that's all right lineup. Fair.
No disgraced politicians. A win is a win.
What a surprise.
God.
You know what? I'll take it.
It's because they listened to our show and took the feedback on board. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like, I don't know who they would have had it unless they would have convinced, like, Rishi Sunak.
Can you imagine? You didn't need the money.
No. Very true. On that note, I wanted to ask you if you ever got to the point where you was invited to go on I'm a Celebrity, and let's just say for the sake of this that you did accept it, what do you think that you actually would struggle with, like, the most?
Carla, what I would struggle with? Food. I'm like the most neurodivergent eater ever. Like, I have, like, very, like, it's
so the issue for you would be more to do with the culinary practices rather than what they're throwing at you, kind of thing.
Oh, I wouldn't like any of it, but the big thing would be, I would, you know, oh gosh, maybe I'd go in there to lose weight. It'd basically be like a fat camp for me, but that is what, like, I can't eat. Like, you know when I come back from holiday and you're like, oh, what was the food like? I'm like, you're asking the wrong person. I just ate chicken tenders and fries the whole time. You know that meme, the chicken tender and fry girls? Like, that's literally me. Like, I'm not a good eater. So, like, it's not going to be, I'm going to struggle. There's loads of things that I don't eat or that I don't like to eat.
See, for me, there would be one main problem with it.
And also, it's not even just that I don't like the food. It's that I can't live without curry.
Yeah,
I literally can't live without curry. Like, I don't. How am I gonna? You know that meme of like 3 days into your trip and a trip abroad, and like, that's me. So,
there's one thing that would be the main thing for me. See if you can guess it.
Oh, rats.
Yeah. I literally, and you know what? Because they know
your fear. Imagine being trapped in a box on a rock. What would you do?
I could never do it because I just.
But imagine you didn't know. And you're in a box, and then they release whatever, and it's like rats. What would you do?
What can I go out?
Like, you just go out straight away.
Well, can I not just remove myself from the situation? If it's not, if
well,
it's,
yeah, you would. You'd
if
lose
it's
a challenge.
Choice between that and not going, I'm sorry, but like I'm not doing it.
You'd
like,
lose a challenge, yeah. No, but initially, actually, while you're in there, what would your reaction? Would you like? I think you'd probably vomit. I think you'd faint. I think you'd probably faint, Carlos.
I like literally think about it now, like my legs are just going like.
Why do you hate rats so much? They are disgusting.
Bad.
They're disgusting in my opinion.
My friend told me about this scene in the new Terrifier movie. It's the clown one. So Simran would love that. But it's basically involving rats. And it's just really
it's your worst
not.
Nightmare.
Yeah, it's,
worst
it's
nightmare.
Just.
Do you ever think about it? Like if you were, like, there's be like if you were in that box. And they release the rats. And yeah, fine, fair enough. You could say, I don't want to do it. But there'd be a time until they can get you out. What would you do while you were in there?
No.
I think you'd need extensive therapy.
I'm literally thinking I would have to yell to get the sound like, oh. Like, no. Don't like it.
They'd have to call in like a therapist in for you. You'd be like Gillian McKeith fainting all
over
the place.
I genuinely feel like I would have to say like, look, I've got a heart condition. Like, don't do that. I can't do that. I will literally, I'll like eat whatever you want me to eat. As long as it's not a rat, I'm not eating a rat. I'll eat whatever you want me to eat.
Would you eat a dead rat?
No.
Because it's not live. Like, is it just live rats or is it like just any rat?
Obviously, what's it called? RSPCA don't like come for me on this, but I'd prefer them if they were dead.
Yeah.
But like, at the same time, still, it's going to freak me out. Like, I was so glad that I didn't do biology in A level.
Why do you dissect a rat?
That's
disgusting.
Like, I would never.
Nah.
Would never.
I'm not gonna lie. I do find them disgusting. They're vermin. Like, I do find them disgusting. Yeah.
Not a fan.
Ratatouille is not your favourite film, I guess.
Oh my gosh, there's a scene in Ratatouille at the beginning where it's like, have you seen the film?
Like ages ago. Yeah.
Basically, obviously, before he goes to the big city, he starts off with both. But he's not, though. All the rats live above this one house, and there's like a moment where like the roof caves in, and all these rats
fall out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that would make me feel sick as well.
No.
That is horrendous. It's not, not cool. Not cool.
Look, there's a reason why. Have you ever seen a film about a good rat, apart from the one that we just talked about? There's a reason why.
Rats.
Like, it's propaganda. Ratatouille is propaganda.
It's rat propaganda.
Like, no, I won't be having any of it. Like, I'm sorry, what kind of food hygiene does that place get? They literally got a rat making
cooking
all the food.
Cooking everything, like, it's a cartoon.
I'm sorry.
It's called suspension of disbelief. It's a cartoon rat, Remy. Pulls the hair, makes them cook. He's a great chef. He makes a mean ratatouille.
Yeah, by giving them all, like, diseases.
Yeah, what a silly concept. A rat that cooks ratatouille.
Why are you giving them airtime?
They took the name Ratatouille and thought, let's make a rat cook it because it's in the name. So how rudimentary. I could come up with a film like that. Someone's flipping fund me. I'll do it.
It's literally Disney's one and only horror film.
Oh my God, Carlos Sotomayor. Do you think on I'm a Celeb, like, people can make disclaimers and be like, I'll do anything but that one? Because people have fears, right?
No, you know, I don't think they would be. I think they'd be... Because also, I think if I was going on it, I probably would keep quiet because like,
you don't want them to specifically.
They're gonna do that, but I don't think you're not allowed to do that. I think they just say, "Well, we can't guarantee that." Be like, "Okay, bye." Like, but the funny thing is, like, they do have this whole like health condition thing where like this person is exempt from this challenge because X, Y, Z.
True.
I'm allergic to them. There we go. How about that? Like,
you need a doctor's note. Oh, pay for your dad.
Come on. No. And you know what the worst thing is? I can't even clip this because I'm not going to make a clip about rats. I'm not about to search it online. I'm not about to do that. Like,
can't even look at them.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Guys, just close your eyes and imagine rats as Carlos is speaking.
No, I'm not because you know what? Also, I post a clip about rats. What's the algorithm going to think? Oh, I want to see something.
Like,
I'm not doing that. I'm sorry, this is so much. It's got on Spotify, but it's not going
Why
on.
Why are
anywhere.
You
like,
so afraid of rats?
Before he actually like has a panic attack.
Right. Moving on. Did you know that skibbity toilets are actually a thing?
Oh my God. So I have a 15-year-old sister and she's very, very characteristically Gen...
Are they Alpha or Gen Z? I don't know.
2008.
Maybe Alpha. I don't know.
Well, whatever she is, she's a different generation to me. Like, the generational gap between us is crazy. And she's at, like, it's to the point, and I know, like, I'm getting on a bit, and it's gotten to the point where I have to ask her, and I have to be like, I remember the other day, like, we were just hanging out, and she was on Fortnite with her friend, a 15-year-old boy, and they're just talking in this language. It's English, but I don't understand what they're saying. And every so often, because I'm sat there, I'm just on my phone, and I'm, like, listening in almost. And every so often, I intervene, and I'm like, what does that mean? What does that mean? And then I had to be like, what does skibbity toilet mean? And her friend just started laughing their heads off, like, oh, don't worry. If you know, you know. If you don't. And I'm like, I had to literally beg her, like, please tell me what it means. Apparently, it doesn't have a meaning. And it means it could be good, it could be bad. So you could be like, skibbity riz. Or you could be like, oh, that's so skibbity. Like, I don't get it.
Well, actually, I've got something to tell them.
Go on.
Actually, skibbity toilet is a thing.
Oh, yeah, it is a thing.
And it's
yeah.
terrifying. Have you seen it?
What is it?
Look.
What? Huh? There's a Wikipedia. He's showing us a Wikipedia article.
Skibbity toilet is a Mashinima web series released through YouTube. It's a fictional war between human-headed toilets and humanoid characters with electronic devices for heads.
Human-headed toilets. That's a toilet with a human head.
Actually terrifying. Look at it.
Guys, this... whatever you are on, I want your dealer's number. Joke. It's a joke. I don't take drugs. But, like, if I did, I would want that person's dealer's number because that must have been a mad trip for them to have come up with that.
Oh, goodness sake.
That's insane.
But I don't understand if this is the... Where did skibbity toilet riz come from?
Because so then it got like on TikTok, like people started talking, like Skibidi Toilet. You know what Riz is?
I know what Riz is. What yeah, Skibidi Toilet Riz?
It's, well, according to my sister, it's Skibidi Toilet Riz. It's, yeah. I kind of get it, but I still kind of don't. It's just Skibidi Toilet Riz.
But then, like, I saw something recently where someone was like, there was like a Skibidi Toilet toy, and that's what made me think about it, because I was like, wait, it's actually a thing. Like, a Skibidi Toilet is a thing.
Yeah. Skibidi Toilet.
It sounds fun to say. Skibidi.
Skibidi. Yeah. So I had to, like, spend like 20 minutes begging my sister and her friend to basically explain to me, and in the end, I still don't entirely get it. It's like, I kind of, logically, I heard what they have to say. It doesn't compute. It doesn't compute in my millennial Gen Z cusp brain.
No. So
they call me Unk all the time. They're like, oh, you've reached Unk status. That's what they say in my family. My sister would be like, you use Facebook. I don't use Facebook.
I'm not gonna lie, Halima. I did think it was a bit weird when you updated your profile picture the other day.
Did you like it?
No, because
so you saw it and you didn't like it.
I got a notification saying Halima Nashir has changed her profile picture. I was like, why?
I use my sister loves Facebook. She's 26. She loves Facebook, but she loves it because all my family in Bangladesh use it. So like, you know, Bangladesh has the most Facebook users out of any country in the world, genuinely. All my family use it, and she likes it for that, but same, like I like it to keep up with like people in Bangladesh, and also like people that I went to school with. Like, there's a demographic of people that I went to school with that they're not on Instagram or anything, but they're the ones that are on their like third kid. But and they just post their kids all the time. I find it quite interesting.
But the thing is, I'm finding that, like, our generation just, like, yes, they're on Facebook, so it's cool if I need to, like, go and, like, find, like, a point of reference or something, but they're not posting anymore. Do you know what I mean?
My sister posts.
Yeah.
Eid 2024 album. But it's stuff for my family to see back in Bangladesh as well.
Fair enough.
Yeah, good times.
Right, I think I need to go and have a lie down now. I'm still traumatized.
What are you going to eat today? That's what I'm always concerned about, what people are going to eat.
I don't know, but I'm also really hungry. I'm really sad, really hungry.
Why don't
you
stop by Istanbul, get yourself a little platter, take it home?
I would do, but realistically, I'm not going to do that.
Okay, fine. What are you going to eat then? Who's cooking? I don't know. Are you cooking?
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Like, I can't think, Halima. I'm really upset. I'm really upset.
Why?
I don't want to, like, this whole rat conversation has really rattled me. Ah, what did I just say?
Right. He's freaking out. This is a good place to leave the conversation.
Freaking out. Good. Bye, everyone.